November 6, 1984. Robert Irvin, interviewed by Kay Duda.
Okay, so the doctrine was being extended inland now through a military reservation where there are no voters,
yes,
and to a very small defenseless group along the Santa Margarita River. And they were claiming the water rights of everyone, even water wells. They were claiming those were theirs, too. And the LA Times was really powerfully fighting that battle on behalf of the property owners down there. And I kept trying to tell the reporter up there that this was the same doctrine that was used in the Thailand case. And he kept saying to me, oil and water do not mix. Don't clobber up my case. And I kept after him. And finally, after one long argumentative session, he agreed that it's the same thing. And at that point, we joined forces. And subsequently, he and I became good close friends, too. His name was Ed Ainsworth. And he and I did some movies together later on, including the Tidelands movie that I mentioned to you. So anyway, it's the legal history of the Tidelands has been really one of unfairness and unhappiness and thievery. And there's just so much money involved that legal principle went out the window. Now, did I cover it all?
Why do you think the Supreme Court of California is pending the decision that
they did? They wanted the money from the state of California. Sure, it was a windfall, $120 million sitting down here. And they have had, if you counted up the dollars today that they have taken out of Long Beach, the Oroville Dam was built primarily with money from the city of Long Beach, Long Beach's Tidelands Mafia. I tried to start a campaign to get it named the Long Beach Dam, but no, even the LA Times wouldn't go along with me on that. But the state is not subject to the same restrictions they applied to us. They can spend the money on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Parks, dams, veterans. And they've taken out of here hundreds of millions of dollars. And as you know from what you talked to Daryl on subsidence, the city is on the hook for the damages that may result when the oil stops being produced and repressuring may stop at some point. So, did I cover it?
Well, I don't know. You're a better judge of it than I am.
I can't remember any aspects of it now. I'd have to go back. You know, if I were looking through the files, I would think of things that would be interesting.
Okay. Why don't you talk about maybe who some of your other clients were and maybe we'll...
Okay. Now, this is also, I ultimately got into a so-called hardcore group. And my principal clients in the beginning were the Harbor Commission. At one point in time, the Richfield Oil Company retained me. And I was on retainer with them for about 11 years. They were the only oil company, incidentally, in the subsidence battle, which said that oil extraction caused subsidence and that repressuring would solve it. They're the only oil company to come out four square on the city side. Now, one morning, Gary Neighbors invited me to come, said he wanted, I was supposed to go to a breakfast meeting. And he didn't tell me who was there, but I had to be there. So I went to this meeting. And there were probably 10 key men there. If I can remember all of them at this time, a lot of them are gone now. There was Bill Burns Miller, Doc Miller was there. Larry Collins, the publisher of The Independent. Hank, well, it was then, Larry was then, I guess, a columnist. He'd been, when the two papers merged and the Ritters bought him out, Larry became a columnist under contract. Hank Ritter was there, the publisher of the paper. Gus Walker, the owner of F&M Bank. Fred Dean, who was a prominent Long Beach businessman, had been a past president of the Chamber of Commerce. Gary Neighbors, Llewellyn Bixby. Who the heck else was there? In any event, I was introduced to this behind-the-scenes group, which, as I became acquainted with what they were concerned about, they were very concerned about subsidence and its damaging effect on the city, and wanting to do something to solve the problem. And ultimately, I became retained by everybody that I've mentioned to you so far. And part of my, I mean, their primary charge to me was to work on the subsidence problem. And I served more or less as a secretary, really, to that committee, and scheduled the meetings. They met regularly. They met like 7:30 for breakfast or 7 o'clock for breakfast. And they kept trying to find ways and means of solving the problem. Ultimately, there was this, and I got to say that the oil companies, with the exception of Richfield Oil, were the enemies of the city, contending that oil extraction had nothing to do with subsidence. They roadblocked us at every turn in Sacramento. We tried to get legislation through to help us solve the problem. There weren't any great friends of the city, incidentally, in the federal fight either on tideland.
Okay.
They were interested in getting the oil, and while the dispute lasted, they figured the oil development would not occur. And they were very actively pushing compromise legislation whereby the states would have given up title in return for a percentage of income from the resources in the tide and submerged lands. Fortunately, we were able to kill that. But anyway, they weren't our friends there, and they weren't our friends in the subsidence fight, with the exception in subsidence of Richfield. As that battle evolved, went along, there became a split inside that committee. Did Darrell talk to you about this at all? Other things that I'd worked on for the newspapers were things like trying to get a major department store in downtown, okay? Buffums was all for this, too. And we're trying to get a Bullocks, for example, to come into downtown Long Beach, and preferably where the United California Bank building is, used to be the Wise building, yeah. Okay. In the course of that, I worked with Sam Cameron at the newspapers, who was the general manager, because Sam knew marketing and was interested in seeing that the advertising revenues with paper increased. So I got better acquainted with Sam. And in the course of our getting acquainted, we got into some rather heated battles on various things, including subsidence. And I prevailed on Sam to get interested in, if he was so intelligent, to help us solve the problem. And Sam did come into the subsidence fight, and Sam became one of the real driving forces in the ultimate solution to the problem. He also became well connected with the state legislature. He and Jess Unruh, who was then the Speaker of the Assembly, Big Daddy, became fast friends. And Unruh was of great help to us in trying to preserve what ownership interest we had. The battle inside that little steering group, and so it wasn't called a hardcore committee then, back in the beginning. It seemed that we were always fighting our own city manager on subsidence. And we just never could seem to get anything done. And there was a great deal of unhappiness on the part of certain members of that group, with the then city manager, Sam Vickers. And it got so bad at one point, I remember that I got a call from, I was talking to Hank Ritter, who was down in Palm Springs, telling him what was happening. And at that moment, he'd had it right up to here, and he told me to call the then mayor, who was Ray Keeler, and tell him that if the city council wanted to eliminate Sam Vickers, remove Sam Vickers as city manager, he, Ritter, as newspaper publisher, would not object. Which I did. And I guess that was the beginning of the ultimate move to unhorse Sam. But it primarily was over because of the failure of the city to aggressively pursue subsidence remedial work by the standards of this committee. Well, there were certain people in that group who were strong supporters of Sam Vickers, so that the heat inside the committee became intense. There was a big rupture, and a lot of members were dropped from the committee and new members added. Those who were no longer included, and I guess I shouldn't, I don't know, I would, no point getting into it really. A lot of them are gone. A lot of them are gone. Anyway, the committee is reconstituted. Some different men added to it. And it became known as the Hardcore Committee because they had just one dedicated purpose, and that was to solve the subsidence problem. And I'm sure Daryl has told you the history of how the Navy lawsuit came to be filed and the support within that committee for its filing. Same thing on the city manager's position. John Mansell had the support of that group in coming in as city manager. And the Navy lawsuit, although it was never carried through to conclusion, ultimately did result in a repressuring program being established and subsidence being stopped. And after that was done, then that committee, well, they tried to map out additional projects they wanted to work on. And they never could dovetail, if not everyone agreed. And eventually, the newspaper was the principal force behind it. Without the newspaper, they had, their power was greatly diluted. The paper was the principal source of power in the community. And the newspaper, I'm sure, they got just weary of not seeing any real progress on projects. And they just stopped having committee meetings. And the thing just died away. So, but that hardcore thing on the wall over there, as Daryl told you, that was provided by the Naval Shipyard employees. And that's an actual core from the oil field down in the subsiding area. I was told that, and I never had encountered this behind-the-scenes type thing before, but I was told that almost every major city has a group like that, and that Los Angeles has had one, and that these are people who have a desire to see the cities progress and use their efforts to do it. Now, they can't, there may be times when they aren't doing it, and they might be doing it with selfish motives, who knows. But in the instance here, I was tremendously impressed by the quality of the men and their dedication. The newspaper took a lot of lumps for trying to run things in town. The LA Times took out after them. We had, one of my jobs for the newspapers was to help move the Custom House out of downtown LA into the harbor, which we did, which didn't warm the hearts of Los Angeles towards us. LA has always had I don't want to say jealousy, they just have never wanted to see Long Beach develop. And had, well, if Long Beach were located anywhere but 20 miles from LA, it would be a major city all on its own. But we have operated in the shadow of LA. And the fact that our harbor advanced so fast and had so much oil money and began to take away business from them and assume a greater position in world trade than they had, the jealousies were understandable. And weirdly enough, the oil field almost stops at the boundary between the two cities.
Yeah.
I've forgotten what their income from oil was, but nothing compared to what Long Beach had. Yeah. So interesting battles.
Yeah. I'm going to take a pause on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You worked on the groundbreaking of Lakewood Place.
Yeah, this would have been in the fall of 1950, and I just had opened my office not too many months before.
And people like Press Telegram or Buffins didn't see that as a conflict of interest?
I wasn't retained by them then.
Oh, okay.
My initial clients were Meidinger and Castleberry, who were a vitamin-selling outfit. They sold a product called Neutralite.
Yes.
Okay. Lee Meidinger and Bill Castleberry retained me to help them with some problems they had in Washington. The Federal Trade Commission, I guess it was, or the Food and Drug Administration, were challenging some of their claims for their vitamin supplements, you know. And they were in a legal battle back there, and they needed legislative help, too. They wanted support in the Congress, so they got me in the act. But see, I did some work helping Herb Kloxing get elected to the California Assembly. Hancock Oil hired me to do something, but I couldn't tell you what it was. And Lakewood...
You must have known them through the harbor?
No. I hadn't started with the harbor.
Okay.
Probably knew them through the Chamber of Commerce. I knew John Hancock, and still do know John, who was then president of that company. But I can't tell you what in the world I did for him. I got a huge fee, $34.38. Isn't that something? No. Isn't that weird? Huh. Well, I was retained by the Harbor Department. When was it here? In December. December 21 was my first paycheck out of the Harbor. Oh my God, Pacific National Bank. That was a bank that opened up on Pacific Avenue that I handled their opening.
And they were eventually taken over by someone else?
Yeah, they, who is the guy? An Englishman? There were three great developers of Lakewood Center. Ben Weingart. Oh, Lord, I can see the man's face and I can hear him talking. I couldn't tell his name. He owns Mark Taper. Yeah, this was his little bank at that time.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Coburn Construction Company, what else did I do in those days? Principally the Harbor Department. Well, that was some outfit wanted to build a building, and the wartime restrictions on the supply of steel were still on. They needed to get some action in Washington to get some steel freed to build a building here. That's all I can remember. And I guess they helped them do it. I was trying to see if I could tell you when I started. To represent these guys that were in that so-called hardcore group. Good line. This is when I was retained by, this would have been the summer of 52, and I was retained by the state legislature, the state of California, to work for that Senate committee. Worked for what is now the Gold Star Manor,
right
on the west side of town. Yeah.
What did
you do? Oh, they were in a battle. I'm trying to remember, the strange lady was fighting with the Eleanor, what? Eleanor Boyd.
Yeah.
She was ahead of it. And she retained me to do something for them. I can't even tell you precisely what it was now. But she was a strange lady. Oh, I was in a meeting with her, and she told me she had just come back from Washington, and that she she was aware that they were pumping gas under her door in her hotel room, trying to asphyxiate her, and it was either the communists or her enemies in this battle. You know, they were out to get her. And I thought, uh-oh. Did some work for a guy called Herb Davies, and that had to do with what? No, it had to do with some city regulations of some kind. I couldn't tell you what they were. It affected the building industry. And Herb hired me, but I guess I was probably being paid by a group of builders or something. Great Lakes Carbon Corporation, they had a big development up in Palos Verdes. I did some work for them. That name, I wouldn't even know who they were. Ruth Roth and Ryan. Who in the world are they? Well, this is just... Oh, I know what Hancock Oils was. Oh, sure. That was to get the Air Force out of the airport. When Hancock had its oil refining out there.
Why didn't it the airport
then? Well, they were, you know, airplanes were in the way, and I'm sure that's what the issue was. What in the world? Because they had the refinery out there before it burned down, and there was some conflict. They wanted to restrict the Air Force or get them out of there. I can't remember which it was. Just have, you know, that's about all I can remember.
Yeah.
That would have been 1950, what? 54, I guess. 53. That was 1953. Okay, let me see if I can pick up one of the hardcore group. Oh, it used to be retained by Free Fairfield. You know Free Fairfield? You want to cross his name? Two things. One, he wanted to and did buy the old Independent building on East 3rd Street, and he wanted to give it to the United Way.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to help publicize what he was doing. That was one thing. Then he also wanted me to help establish the Petroleum Club, which I did.
Oh.
And in return for that, they made me a charter member. So, Free and I were good friends for quite a while until we had a smashing falling out when he really got mad at me. In fact, he took a full-page ad out in the paper, giving the Chamber of Commerce and directly hell and me hell indirectly on it. Valerie Silver, dance studio. Oh, great accounts. Given Manufacturing Company. Publicized one. She's the only bad account I ever had.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't charge her anything to speak of, and she only paid me half my fee.
I think you're the one who got the same today
for Silverstone. No, she was Valerie Silver when I knew her. I never could get my... I turned it over to a collection agency, and they couldn't get it. So that's interesting. No, yeah, I didn't have a contract, just an agreement. But she welched on it, which I thought was pretty poor. Given Manufacturing Company, they had a plan to solve smog. This was January of 55. And they wanted to build an air sewer system. Literally, take all of the exhaust from all the plants, pump it into an air sewer, take it up over the mountains, and blow it out over the desert. And they had done a lot of research on this, and they hired me to help publicize that plan. They were taken over by who did take them over? They had Waste King with one of their products. But who absorbed that company? I can't remember. Oh my God, I was retained by Community Hospital.
A conflict of interest.
No, not then, no. I was on their board, And they asked me to do publicity for them under a contract, which I tried to do. I resigned from their board, and they resented the publicity that Memorial was getting at that time.
Because it was me.
I don't think this was even before Memorial. It would have been Seaside.
Oh.
Yeah. They could get all the publicity and poor old community couldn't get any. I did a couple of things for them. One, the wing they have out there, which, I don't know what they call it, the Hatfield Wing.
Mm-hmm.
That was built under funds from the Hill-Burton Act. And to get those funds, they had to do certain things and make certain, and I helped Hatfield put together the presentations on that and the brochures on it and the publicity on it and all that. And the other thing was, I became convinced and convinced them that they couldn't solve their problem with a contract person, that they must have their own PR department, and that was the beginning of the PR department out there. So, the city of Long Beach retained me to fight the state. I went up to Sacramento to try and do that and didn't succeed. Did some work for Burton Chase.
Now
when he was county supervisor. That would have to go 56. Was he mayor then or was he supervisor? I see I got a fee from the election of Chase committee. That's one of these weird things. I'll tell you privately.
That's why you didn't
tell. No, I don't mind. Because Ofrey and I, it was common knowledge that we had a big falling out. One of the propositions that Richfield Oil had succeeded in getting on the state ballot, I think it was called Proposition 4 at that time, would have forced the unitization of oil fields if a majority of the interests, okay, and would have enabled Long Beach to repressure this field down here and stop subsidence. So I was on the Chamber of Commerce Board at that time, Board of Directors, and argued persuasively that they should endorse this proposition. And they did. And they had succeeded up to that point. They had made inroads in getting a lot of oil people in Signal Hill to join the chamber and support it. Well, the instant they took that stand, it was so controversial. There was a mass exodus of independent oil men out of the Chamber of Commerce, including Free Fairfield. And Free had loaned the chamber some dough, incidentally, to get organized in a new building or something, I can't remember. They had to borrow some money because times were tough. But anyway, when that endorsement came out, all Free went up in smoke and took out a full page ad. I've got it over here somewhere. I'll find it for you before you leave. How you doing on time? So that's why we had a falling out. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. I just got in the afternoon paper and opened it up and I was reading this ad. And the phone rang and it was Fairfield. And he said, "Did you call me?" And I said, "No, I didn't, Free." "Well, God damn it, that's funny." He said, "Somebody by the name of Irvin called me." And I said, "Maybe my brother at the Chamber of Commerce called you." "Yeah, maybe that was it. But while I have you on the phone," he said, "have you seen today's newspaper?" And I started to laugh. I said, "Free, I'm looking at it right now." And the more I laughed, the madder he got. And he says, "I don't see anything that's a goddamn funny." And I said, "Free, you sound just like my dad." I said, "He thinks I'm crazy, too." And I said, "You sound just like him." Well, that slammed down at the phone. I don't think we ever spoke again. I don't think so. Well, anyway, let me find out for you. When?
Yeah, there must have been a lot of conflict in Long Beach over that issue.
Oh, yeah, it really tore the town up. Okay, here we go. This would have been, am I back on the tape now? I would have started working for that committee in August of 1957. Because they see Buffum's comes in here. Harry Buffum was one of the guys. I guess they didn't mention.
Yeah.
F&M Bank, Dean's Electronics, Twin Coast Newspapers.
What's Twin Coast Newspapers?
Well, that's the Ritter Corporation that owned the Press Telegram, the Independent, the Press Telegram. Then. That was the name of the corporation then. Later became Ritter Publications. Yeah. Marshall Stone, who was an insurance man, I think, then. Jotham Bixby Company. Sully Miller, that was Earl Burns Miller. Those were some of the initial guys on that committee. And they began to pay me small